From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, Vanished Civilizations. Here's what's happening. The coronavirus Omicron variant kept a jittery world off kilter as reports of infections linked to the mutant strain cropped up in more parts of the globe, and one official said the wait for more information on its dangers felt like an eternity. At the same time, the dominant Delta variant continues to unsettle nations, especially in Europe, where there are many still dealing with a surge in infections and hospitalizations, and some are considering mandatory vaccinations. Much is still unknown about Omicron, including how contagious it is and whether it can evade vaccines, but governments have nevertheless rushed to impose restrictions that they hoped would keep it out. In a moment, a special guest joins us, Del Bigtree. We're going to talk about why nations with the least vaccinated rate have the least COVID rate, where nations that have high vaccination rates have a lot of COVID. The Biden administration has been hit with a string of legal losses over its COVID-19 vaccine mandates, with a number of federal judges across the nation halting the implementation of the rules, claiming overreach by the executive branch, as the Justice Department now plans to vigorously defend the mandates in court. We'll see what happens. U.S. manufacturing activity picked up in November amid strong demand for goods, keeping inflation high as factories continue to struggle with pandemic-related shortages of raw materials. CEOs and corporate insiders have sold a record $69 billion in stock in 2021, as looming tax hikes and a lofty share price encourage many to take their profits. The selling is likely to increase even more this month. It's often as an active month for sales due to tax planning. Let's check in with registered investment advisor Mish Shedlock. Mish, tell me about this. Why are they selling off their stock? They know something?
Well, their timing might be very good. I'll get to that in a moment. But some of it is happenstance. Some of it is actually fear. We still don't know what is going to be in that package that is now sitting with the Senate. There's some rules in there that are going to mandate some forced selling. I suspect they will get edited out, but some CEOs and wealthy just aren't taking a lot of chances. Some of it is just kind of amusing. A couple weeks ago, Elon Musk asked people on Twitter whether or not he should sell 10% of his stake. And so they responded yes, and guess what? He went out there and did it. There's a lot of sales by Jeff Bezos and Amazon execs. But when we get back to the, let's go to the timing factor here. George, I'm really watching the bond market, not the stock market. But today was very interesting. We had the biggest one of the biggest stock market swings in history today. The S&P from top to bottom swung 142 points.
That's huge.
That's about 3%. It's the 12th biggest swing since going back to 1967 when they first started keeping track of this stuff. There's a lot of volatility here because of those things. People are blaming this new COVID virus. People are blaming the statements made by Jerome Powell to Congress the other day. He said that, well, maybe he's going to have to taper faster, and the implications were that, where he would start hiking rates faster. George, I still don't believe it. I'm watching the long bond. The 30-year bond yield fell from 2.45% back in April. It's 1.75%. We've had a relentless flattening of the yield curve for all the way since April. George, to me, that's a recession signal. The Fed's trying to hike. They're way, 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 way late in fighting inflation. By the time they get around to hiking, it's going to be almost too late to do so, George.
Hold on and don't fall out. Thanks, Mish. Around 37% of the world's population, or almost 3 billion people, have still never used the internet, and most of them live in developing countries, according to an estimate from a UN agency for information and communications. That's amazing. President Vladimir Putin of Russia said that Moscow would seek Western guarantees precluding any further NATO expansion and deployment of its weapons near his country's borders, a stern demand that comes amid fears of a Russian invasion of the Ukraine. I had Howard Bloom checked in on this story today. And Howard, what have you uncovered on this one?
Well, the situation in the Ukraine could easily lead to World War III and a nuclear Armageddon. So why is Russia so focused on the Ukraine? The Ukrainian capital of Kiev was the original home of the Viking princes who founded Russia in 882 AD. That Kievan leadership of the Russians lasted 250 years. The capital of the Russian Empire did not move definitively to Moscow until 1503. So in a sense, Kiev is as Russian as Moscow. But that's apparently not the way the majority of the Ukrainian people see it. They want to be part of the European Union. They want to be part of NATO. The desire to be in the European Union and in NATO is so strong that it's been enshrined in the Ukrainian Constitution. And we have supported that aspiration with $2.5 billion in military aid in the last 7 years. What's more, both Democrats and Republicans in Congress want to increase that aid. Meanwhile, Vladimir Putin looks back to what he sees as a great catastrophe, the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1991. Until that collapse, Ukraine was a part of Russia's 20th century empire. Then, when the Soviet Union fell apart, the Ukraine became an independent state. Putin wants the Ukraine back. So in 2014, Putin pulled off a lightning maneuver using masked soldiers with no insignia on their uniforms, the soldiers we call little green men. Putin retook the key Black Sea Peninsula of Crimea and put an army of his little green men into the Donbass region of the Ukraine. Then Putin got Russian sympathizers in Ukraine's Donbass to declare an independent people's state, and he tucked that people's state into the Russian Federation, a federation whose territory makes it the biggest country in the world. Now the Russians have massed close to 100,000 troops on the Ukrainian border. But that's not all. 2 weeks ago, on November 15th, the Russians demonstrated their ability to destroy the satellites on which we depend for GPS, yep, military targeting, and global military connectivity. They launched a weapon from Earth to destroy one of their old Soviet-era satellites, creating a debris field of up to 19,000 pieces, a debris field that forced NASA to postpone a spacewalk. But that's not all. The Russians have performed two tests in the White Sea of a missile we can't equal and may not be able to stop, a hypersonic anti-ship missile that Putin says travels at 9 times the speed of sound. Called the Zircon, the missile can fly so low and so fast that our radar can't detect it, and it can carry a nuclear warhead. The Zircon can only fly 620 miles, but Russia's submarines could bring it close enough to our shores to strike cities like New York, Washington, L.A., and Houston. Then there's Russia's cyber war against us, a war that's going on at this very minute, a cyber war that could conceivably take out our military internet. Now, what would the loss of military internet do to us? Our hideously expensive F-35 fighter jets cannot take off without internet connectivity. If there's an attack and you are a fighter pilot, you can run out to the airfield, scramble up the ladder to the cockpit of your jet, try to fire up your engine, and nothing will happen. You'll be dead on the tarmac. Then there are the nonstop cyber attacks from two of Russia's allies, China and Iran. Yep. Experts believe that these cyber attackers could destroy our energy supply, our water supply, and the supply chain that brings us food. No wonder Newsweek warns that if things get really bad in the showdown over the Ukraine, we could have a new Pearl Harbor.
I got to tell you, Howard, you're doing a great job on this story. Thank you, and keep following up on it. A Belgian virologist says that mass vaccinations will create an unstoppable series of pathogens. What does he know that a lot of other medical professionals don't? In a moment, producer Del Bigtree back with us. We'll talk about vaccines next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. George Norrie with you. Del Bigtree back with us. One of the most preeminent voices of the vaccine risk awareness movement. His career as an Emmy Award-winning producer of the CBS talk show The Doctors changed profoundly when he produced the documentary Vaxxed, which is credited with igniting a revolution against pharmaceutical tyranny around the world. Now, Del's internet talk show, The High Wire, It's one of the fastest growing programs in the natural health arena, and his not-for-profit ICanDecide.org is leading worldwide investigations into drug and vaccine fraud and abuse. Del, welcome to the program, and I can't think of a better time to have you on.
It's really a pleasure to be speaking with you, George. Thanks for having me.
And by the way, congratulations on your career and your work. You do just a remarkable job, and it's really an honor to have you on the program with us.
Well, thank you very much. Feelings are mutual. You've been at this a long time, and you're one of the guys I studied when I thought, what does it mean to be a good interviewer? So it's really an honor to be here.
I've been looking into the situation in Africa, one of the continent's least vaccinated areas, yet they have the least amount of COVID than other nations that have been highly vaccinated. What the heck's going on, Del?
Well, I mean, I think if you really look at this, you have to ask the question, you know, was it smart to treat this virus in a way we've never treated it before? We've never vaccinated the entire world for every other flu, every other coronavirus, every other rhinovirus there ever was. We simply let it run its course. We'll crank out a few vaccines for the elderly and people that may be at high risk, and we let natural immunity run its course with everyone else. This has been a gigantic experiment, and I think over through the course of this evening, we'll talk about what a failure it is. All Africa is doing is what the United States of America, what Canada, what the UK has always done every other year with every other pandemic except this one. So Africa is simply, mostly because of a lack of resources, is unable to get their hands on the vaccine. All they can do is deal with natural immunity. They're catching this virus, which for 99.9% of people is not deadly. And so they are developing what we know as herd immunity throughout these, you know, the nations in Africa. And then they're doing things like using treatments for people that are in severe, you know, cases. They give them ivermectin, and some of them are using ivermectin, you know, prophylactically, and hydroxychloroquine, which they have on hand because they use it for malaria. These are all drugs that have been shown to be incredibly effective, up to 85 to 90%. Percent effective at keeping severe cases out of the hospital and from going into death. So they're using treatments in a way that we should be using treatments. Yet here in America, we're doing the exact opposite. We're in hospitals, we're denying people access to these treatments that have been shown in thousands of studies around the world to be incredibly effective. We're using a vaccine that has never been tested before on human beings. And so we're experimenting with that, and we can talk about how that's pressuring the virus. But ultimately, we have a vaccine that fails to stop infection, fails to stop transmission. So really, we should be asking ourselves, what good is it? In many cases, it may be doing more harm than good. But luckily, we have these third world nations like Africa and others. Even Haiti is doing better than we are. And they're going to be the shining example of what would have happened had we just let this virus run its course the way that we always have every other time, and simply really set to protect those that were in the high-risk category. This is key. A lot of people will say that, you know, Del Bigtree gets people killed because he doesn't want to protect him. It's not true. There is a very specific group of people that represent the, you know, about 80% of the deaths that are happening. They're over the age of 75 or 80. They have other comorbidities like cancer and diabetes and heart disease, COPD. That group of people should really have been protected, maybe locked down. I think that everyone should have a choice, but had we protected that group and then let our children not wear masks but catch this virus, and what they have is this brilliant natural immunity that happens called innate immunity, where they don't even get the symptomatic infection. Their body kills the virus dead. If we let our children do that and all the healthy people do that, we would have herd immunity or something, you know, very close to it by now. Usually that would take just under a year. Of course, we've elongated this experience with this virus, and we've brought more and more variants to light. When have we ever heard about this before? We've never heard about variants. All of this is a result of a failed vaccine program and a failed experiment on humanity.
And the major media, Del, will not discuss this at all.
No.
It's unbelievable. I want to ask you about mRNA. One of the magical aspects of our program is we educate people, and I want to learn about this too. This was developed by Dr. Robert Malone. We're going to talk about him in a moment. But what is exactly mRNA technology?
Okay, well, I think it's important that to go back to what we all understand about a vaccine from growing up and what we studied in biology class. A vaccine usually is where we inject some form of a bacteria or a virus. We know that it's killed or attenuated, meaning we've taken the strength out of it so that it really can't run rampant through our bodies. We inject it into your arm, maybe your leg if you're a baby, and the idea is you send this virus or bacteria into the body in a small dose amount, and then your body sees it, it creates antibodies to fight it, and then once it's developed those antibodies, you have this cellular memory that's supposed to last for quite some time, at least, you know, a couple of years with most vaccines. Now, what the mRNA vaccine technology is doing is completely different, and this is why it's really important. This is a brand new experimental gene therapy that's been adjusted to be used as a vaccine, and that's where Robert Malone made that adjustment. We'll get into that later. But what this is doing is instead of injecting a virus or a bacteria into your body, we're sending a message, an mRNA message. Now, an mRNA message is usually the message sent from your DNA to your cells to protect you against certain diseases. So it's a fake or, you know, a message made in a laboratory. Instead of coming from your DNA, it's coming from a laboratory. We wrap it in a fatty lipid so that it can get past your immune system, and it goes into your cells. This message goes into your cells. Think of it like a recipe, and it teaches your cell how to make the virus and therefore turns your own cells into a virus manufacturing plant.
Jeez.
We are turning our own bodies into a manufacturing plant, and to be a little more specific, not the whole virus, but just the most deadly part of this virus, the spike protein, the S protein we keep hearing about. And so where in a natural infection, you could get tens of thousands of viral particles or maybe even millions, they brag that the vaccine is creating trillions of these spike protein viral particles being made by your cells and proliferating through your body. And so right there, you have to imagine that if you just have a simple understanding, we're creating this virus in our cells are releasing it all over our bodies, and then our immune systems go and see that our own cells are the enemy in our body. They're creating a virus, and they start attacking our own cells. Now, if that interaction does not stop, if it just keeps going, that is literally the definition of autoimmune disease. So right there, we should have had long-term safety trials to say, look, we are making our own cells the enemy of our body. Is this going to be a good idea? And so it's like no other vaccine we've ever done. So we are making the virus from inside of us come out instead of coming from the outside and going in.
Now, is that why, Dell, that so many people who have been vaccinated are coming down with COVID now?
Well, I think that that may be a little bit different issue. There's multiple explanations for that. But here's the main explanation of why a vaccine might be failing. When you get vaccinated, you're getting vaccinated and you're getting what's called specific antibodies. Now, you have non-specific antibodies that are part of your innate immune system. Non-specific meaning they recognize every variant, everything out there. You're born with this great innate immune system that recognizes bacteria and viruses that live on the other side of the planet. It's one of the great, you know, mysteries of our immune system. It's powerful and it's effective. And so no matter what the variant is, think of it like robbers coming through your house. These protectors don't care what the race is, what the creed. Whoever comes through the window is seen as an enemy, and it kills it dead. As soon as you take a vaccine, you are now teaching your immune system to only recognize the exact variant you're being vaccinated for. In this case, the alpha, the original form of the Wuhan strain. And so once you have that specific immunity, now your body's only looking for alpha. And so if you all of a sudden have Delta come along, or in this case, Omicron, which is now coming, the concern is that you now have a bad match. Your antibodies are lining up, trying to attack it like alpha, but it's not alpha, and it's slipping by. It's getting by because our bodies, our immune system, have been trained to look for the wrong enemy. And so that's the problem with vaccinated immunity. And so the real question is when we were looking at the trials, all the trials said, look, the vaccine looks to be, you know, pretty effective. It wasn't brilliant. It never set out to sort of stop infection or transmission, which a lot of people would be surprised by, but it was at least good at handling alpha. The problem now is that we never had trials to say, is it going to be any good with Delta or Omicron or any of these other variants? There's, I think Paul Offit, one of the world's famous virologists, said there's already been 12,000 mutations of this coronavirus.
That's crazy. Del, hold on for a second. We'll talk more about this when we come back. This could be one of the most important programs we've done. We'll be back. We're going to take your calls next hour with Del Bigtree as we're talking about, of course, the incredible situation with COVID-19 and vaccinations. So jump on board. If you've been vaccinated as well, check in with us. I want to know, one, how you're feeling, and two, if you've had any COVID symptoms, but share your stories with us. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you along with Del Bigtree. And by the way, I want to point out that we will never on this program tell you and recommend not to get vaccines or to get vaccines. What we want to do is give you the information so you can make up your own mind for yourself and your family what you're going to do, hence the program tonight as well with Del Bigtree. Del, they say that 95% of the people who have been vaccinated are basically okay. Is that a high figure?
That was what we were told coming out of the trials, that the vaccine was 95% effective. But people have to understand what that means. You know, a lot of people think, based on everything we knew about vaccines, that that meant that we were 95% protected, that we wouldn't catch, that 95% of us that get the vaccine will not catch the virus. That is not what that meant. 95% effective coming out of the trials meant that it was 95% effective at lowering symptomatic illness. This is really important, a bit of a word game that took place that caught a lot of people by surprise. It even took me a while to understand it. If you remember, for a long time, I thought they were using two different names. It was either called COVID-19 or SARS-CoV-2, and they seemed interchangeable, but they're not actually interchangeable. I finally realized what was happening was that SARS-CoV-2 is the infection. If you get infected with this virus, you have SARS-CoV-2 in your body. COVID-19 is the symptoms, the symptomatic expression of that disease. And so when they came out and said it's 95% effective at stopping COVID-19, everybody thought, oh, it keeps me from getting infected and therefore it keeps me from transmitting it. And we all thought this is going to get us to herd immunity. But you see, the word game was there. What they weren't telling you is it was 95% effective at stopping SARS-CoV-2. It is not. So everyone that gets the vaccine is still going to get infected with SARS-CoV-2 when they come in contact with someone that is infectious. The question is how serious will their disease be? What they're saying is it's going to reduce your symptoms. Now, that might be good for some people, but there's real problems with that. The problem is, number one, Let's think about, we're trying to stop this virus. We're trying to neutralize it and kill it dead so that our society can get back to business as usual. But if a naturally infected person, someone's walking around, they don't have the vaccine, if they get infected, number one, they're going to probably have symptoms, and so they're going to know they're sick, and they're not going to go running around town. They're going to stay home, box of Kleenex, and say, you know what, I don't feel so good. Whereas someone who's having reduced symptoms from the vaccine, they may not know they're sick. This is what the vaccine's achieved, and they're going to go to work. They're going to go into a restaurant. They're going to get on an airplane not knowing they're sick because they still are getting infected. They still have SARS-CoV-2, but they don't maybe have COVID-19 because they're not having those symptoms, yet they're spreading it everywhere. And so what the vaccine appears to be doing is turning people into super spreaders, whereas the naturally infected person is more likely to stay home. You also have what we were talking about earlier. Once you've had the natural infection, all of the studies, you know, all the well-done studies, there's a couple of real beaters out there that they're right, trying to point to, but the best studies in the world are showing that natural immunity appears to last for years. Right now, we know that it lasts as long as this virus has been here because all the people that got originally infected and had a symptomatic illness, they then recovered, and now they have been immune and cannot catch any variant no matter how we hit them. Yet the vaccinated, as we're seeing more and more breakthrough cases, are getting more and more infected, and they seem to be unable to stop any of the variants, and we only have to look at Israel to see this failure. Israel is the most vaccinated nation in the world. Benjamin Netanyahu made a deal with Pfizer to sell his nation as a test group. It's the largest test group in the world. They kind of bragged about it and said, well, look at us. Well, we are looking at them.
They're talking about booster four, aren't they?
That's right. They're going into a fourth booster because the vaccine is such a complete failure. They're being banned from flight into most European nations now because their infection rate is the second highest infection rate in the world, and they're the most vaccinated people. So, and the hospital rates, they're now above 60%. Some are as high as 80 or 90% of the serious illnesses and deaths in hospitals are now amongst their fully vaccinated. And so even that dream that the vaccine would at least reduce your symptoms, it's not even achieving that in Israel, who's just a couple of months ahead of America. This is a total disaster. It's a complete failure, and it's going to lead to much, much bigger problems, and perhaps this vaccine appears to be blocking our ability to reach herd immunity. It's keeping people from developing an immunity that will last so that we can get ourselves through this pandemic and to the other side.
Del, tell us about this Belgian virologist that we mentioned at the top of the show. He believes that the vaccines are creating more variants, doesn't he?
Yes, that's true. And Geert van den Bosch is just a really fascinating expert. He is as high up as it gets. He has worked for Gavi, which is the global committee on making vaccines for the entire world. He's worked for the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation with the WHO. He was the head of an Ebola vaccine program, working on releasing an Ebola vaccine in Africa. And so his specialty is not in a laboratory where most people are at. His specialty is once you've done your clinical studies in the laboratory, he studies what will it do once we release it into the wilds, into the population. He also has a veterinary medicine background, which gives him the understanding of how animals catch this. They're considered reservoirs for diseases like coronavirus. We hear about bats. How is it going to affect the virus if it jumps from humans into animals and back to humans? So he's this brilliant genius when it comes to the wild release of a vaccine into the world. He's pro-vaccine as it gets, yet about 8 months ago now, he used his own Facebook page and went out on his LinkedIn to tell the world, stop this mass vaccination program immediately. We are going to create one of the greatest scientific catastrophes in world history. And it's fairly complex, but I'll try and make it simple.
Sure.
What he's saying is we have never before had a mass vaccination program like this for any illness. We have never vaccinated everyone in the world. Now, I was surprised to hear that. I think we all think, well, don't we vaccinate our kids with measles and don't we vaccinate for the flu? Well, the truth is we do, but we only vaccinate the vulnerable. With children with a measles vaccine, before the vaccine ever came along, we essentially had herd immunity. Every adult had had it. They had lifelong immunity, a natural immunity that was going to last. So once the vaccine came online, all we had to do was vaccinate the children, and then we said, look, the whole world is currently immune. And that's been the case with almost every virus. The virus is handled naturally until we come up with a vaccine, and then we vaccinate the remaining small group of people. Usually less than 5% of the population gets vaccinated at one time. This is the first time we've ever vaccinated everybody in a nation, everybody in the world at the same time. And what he's saying is that's creating a pressure, an evolutional pressure upon the virus where we're teaching it to become stronger, more pathogenic, more virulent, so that it could ultimately become more deadly. We know about this when people think about bacteria. We know that we have CRE in hospitals and MRSA, that the use of too much antibiotics has pressured bacteria to become more virulent and deadly. And ultimately, we are now living in what we call the end of the antibiotic age. We believe that bacteria are getting so smart now that we're going to lose the ability to use antibiotics against them because we've just overdone it and the bacteria have learned their way around it. This is what Geert is saying we're doing with the mass vaccination program, and it's accelerated. He is describing it government as we are pressuring a coronavirus that is highly virulent as to begin with, but has a low death rate. This is, even though, you know, my heart goes out to those people that have died. I'm not saying that nobody died from the coronavirus.
I understand.
But it still has a very low, about a 0.002% death rate amongst healthy people, and maybe a 0.2% amongst those that are at high risk. But for the rest of everyone else, we're handling this virus just fine. But by vaccinating, we are essentially taking and creating variants. And let me try and really quickly use an analogy. Imagine if a scuba diver dives into a bay. He goes swimming in the same bay, you know, every afternoon, and there's killer whales that swim in there. Let's say that's the alpha variant. That's the original variant of this virus. Now, killer whales, you know, rarely might attack a scuba diver, but it's a very low risk. But the scuba diver decides, you know what, I'm afraid of killer whales, and at low risk, I still want to kill the killer whales. And so he pulls out a gun and starts killing killer whales. Well, here's the problem. There were no sharks in the bay when he would swim there because the killer whales are the dominant species. In this case, the alpha variant was the dominant virus.
Mm-hmm.
There's already thousands of variants, but the winner, the one winning the bay, was the weaker one, was the killer whales. But when you start, and the killer whales will even attack sharks to sort of finish this analogy. And so sharks don't swim in that bay. But if you start killing all the killer whales or start taking out the alpha variant, the shark, you know, now you have hammerhead sharks come in. Let's call that the delta. Now all of a sudden you're swimming in a bay that's filled with the delta variant, a more virulent, potentially more deadly, and it's getting around. And that gun you used to use against killer whales does not work against sharks. And so now you're in a more dangerous environment. This is what he is saying we were doing with the vaccine. We are taking out the milder forms of the virus. It's called selection pressure, and we're selecting for a more virulent and more dangerous virus, and we're going to continue this process as we give more boosters and more vaccines. We keep pressuring it more and more, and his concern is that we are seeing mutations in this virus at a speed that is almost unprecedented now under this unnatural vaccine pressure, and he believes we are within a year of creating a vaccine-resistant pathogen that may be unstoppable and could wipe out a gigantic portion of our species because of his concern. And this is not, he's not alone. He's now being supported by Dr. Robert Malone, who invented the mRNA vaccine technology, along with, you know, other world-renowned scientists. So he's starting finally to be listened to. But the question was, is, will our own government start listening to it? Because Tony Fauci's not listening to it.
He's not. I had the Robert F. Kennedy Jr. on last week, Dell, and he thinks Fauci should be put in jail.
I believe the same thing. I believe that Fauci should be tried for crimes against humanity. Not only has he foisted a vaccine upon us that is not working, that was improperly tested, is doing harm to countless people. We can get into those side effects if you want to. But I think the greatest tragedy is the denial of useful treatments, hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, budesonide. We are, you know, we're talking about hundreds of thousands of people dying in hospitals that were denied proper treatment. And that was all because Tony Fauci came out against treatments. I think there was reasons for that. Many people may not know that in order to release the vaccine early, an emergency use authorization, which is what it got, essentially it's like a right to try. You know, when we think of someone dying from cancer and they want to use an experimental vaccine that's in a trial or an experimental drug that's in a trial, and they say, I'm going to die anyway, I want the right to try. Well, they're using sort of that as a way to use an emergency use authorization. But the rules for the emergency use authorization by the FDA stipulated there can be no available treatment. There must be no other available treatment, no other vaccine available that works, so that's the only reason we're going to go and let you take this totally experimental product without proper safety testing is because we just have no choice. And so I think Tony Fauci went out of his way to destroy people's belief in hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin and these products that have shown in countless studies, I can't tell you, so many tens of thousands of people have been saved in long-term studies, short-term studies, showing how effective these treatments are. And by denying people these treatments, We are essentially murdering people in hospitals in the United States of America. Right.
My son's wife's sister was sick with COVID, and the doctor gave her COVID pills, and it went away in 2 days. And I think one of the things we have to warn people about, Dell, is ivermectin is a parasite horse dewormer, but people have been going to the feed and livestock stores eating the equivalent of what you give to a 1,500-pound horse. You got to be careful.
Absolutely. And then let's be clear. There's different forms of ivermectin. Ivermectin in 2015 won the Nobel Prize of Medicine for its use in people. No one would say use the veterinary form. I mean, we give a lot of vaccines and drugs.
Or take the whole tube. Don't take the tube of it.
Don't take the tube, the paste. You know, get the real drug that's made for dealing with parasites. Now, there's reasons why this appears to be working against this particular virus. But, you know, again, I would say you must be working with a doctor, and we need to free up our doctors to be able to use these products. This is what Fauci's doing. He's tying the hands of our doctors so they can't give treatments that are really proving to be incredibly effective at, you know, reducing the length of this illness and the serious, you know, ness of this illness.
And this mandating of vaccines by the president, which it's been shut down by almost every court that it hits these days, it's unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. And look, in some ways, for me and people that have really been trying to get people to wake up to the reality that our government should not have control of our bodies. We are not farm animals. And if we allow our government to pass laws where they can inject us with things we have no control over, you cannot consider yourself a free citizen any longer. You are now literally a farm animal, and the President of the United States is your farmer. And so luckily, you know, as you've said, the Fourth Circuit Court, Fifth and Sixth Circuit Courts have all weighed in on this and said that these are illegal mandates, even the OSHA mandate. They are not in a position to federally force this product onto free citizens in the United States of America. So the beauty of this is that it's waking people up to the fact that the government, maybe for a long time, has been overstepping their bounds here in trying to force us to take products. And I think it's been really brilliant. And again,
Hold on, Del. We're at the top of the hour. We'll come back and talk more. I want to ask you, if somebody's been vaccinated, should they be concerned about the long term? And then we'll take calls with you on Coast to Coast AM.